This episode brought to you by Origins. Take your indirect lending to the next level. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show. Here with CU Broadcast. Welcome back to our continued coverage of the California and Nevada Leagues conference here. It's called REACH, actually, Jill Nowacki. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
We all know that.
REACH, right?
I'm just kidding. No, we're at this great conference here in Las Vegas called REACH. But I'm with the fine folks at the California and Nevada Credit Union Leagues. And look who is in the studio lounge. Oh, my goodness. All the way from Africa.
That's right.
Jill Nowacki from Humanity. How are you, Jill?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Better now that you're here.
Excellent.
Because you've had many adventures this year. And one of those was most recently in Africa.
Yes.
You want to give us, before we dive into the topic here, because you're a moderator on one of the panels here.
Yes.
But tell us about Africa real quick.
Absolutely. So it was a wonderful opportunity. We were there for about a week with ACOSCA, which is the Association for the Saving and Credit Cooperatives, or the SACOs.
It's quite an acronym.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It's long.
Yes.
It's the Continental Trade Association in Africa. And they were doing their national, or their international congress, I guess, in Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
It was an incredible opportunity to be there. 34 countries represented during the conference.
Oh my gosh.
I had the chance to go and do a pre-session workshop with the attendees on inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, it's very interesting to go to a different continent with people who have different challenges when they talk about inclusion. There.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different sometimes than what we talk about.
Right, right.
And to see the differences and the similarities in that too. So they also have challenges with gender inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
They also have challenges with age inclusion and generational inclusion. They also have a lot of challenges with how to be relevant to young people. And that was a large part of the conversation that we were having there. So fantastic to learn there. The Botswana credit union movement is actually kind of an emerging credit union movement in the continent right now, and something that was really special was that the president of the country of Botswana came and addressed the group.
That's a
and
big wow.
So that was a huge wow.
Wow.
Talked about his support for cooperative finance as part of that, and so definitely a huge indicator of how much progress the SACOs in Africa have been making, how much ACOSCA has really been doing to support them under the leadership of George Ambato, and just being able to see that come forward is really inspiring.
Yeah, if there's one person that makes this world go around, it's George Ambato, for sure. That guy.
Yeah, he's excellent.
He's an amazing human being.
Yeah. Another big thing that came out of that was really interesting to me is that they've added another element of focus for their cooperatives there, specifically climate action.
Mm-hmm.
And so being in a different part of the world and seeing the impact of climate change and the work they're doing and how they're working to bring together the SACOs to help address and make a difference in that area was really fascinating too, and to hear some of the practical solutions they have. So a lot of key takeaways from that one that I felt like I was bringing back and thinking this is something to look at a little bit differently.
I forecast a blog post or a podcast in your future about this type of thing. So I'll be sitting on pins and needles for that one. Super interesting stuff. Well, and congrats on making it back here.
Thank you. And
sharing that experience. It's always top of mind for us to see what's going on, I think, in the rest of the world, to get out of our silo here in the United States and see what else other people are doing and how we can bring that stuff back here and adapt it as well and be better credit unions for it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Yesterday I mentioned I was over at the International Call Center Conference and I was speaking on talent shortage issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I think here in the U.S. right now, we are like, oh, talent, it's hard to find talent. Talent shortage is a real thing. You go to Africa and they're so young over there. So what they really are challenged by right now is a high unemployment rate for the youth because there just aren't enough jobs for the number of young people they have in Africa right now.
Oh, gosh.
And so again, when we look at that from that global perspective and we think like there's a shortage of talent maybe here in the U.S., we feel like sometimes, and there's a treasure of talent over in Africa right now across the continent with that. And so watching some of those shifts too is interesting from my perspective, working so much in the people side.
Yeah,
of
well,
too.
My wheels are turning like, hey, remote work, how about hiring some of those folks?
Right.
Hey, you stay there and live your life and you can work for us remotely.
Absolutely.
So that's brings remote work to a whole new definition.
Absolutely.
So let's take advantage of that talent that's over there.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's talk about what's going on here.
Okay.
You are going to be a moderator on a panel tomorrow, and it's entitled Voices of Opportunities and Challenges with Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
Excellent.
So give me a, well, thank you.
Well done.
Long title, important topic. So share with me kind of an overview on what you guys are going to be talking about, obviously, diversity, equity, inclusion. But yeah. How are you going to moderate these talented folks on the panel here?
Yeah.
What can we talk about?
And so let's talk first about those voices who we're bringing in with that.
Yes.
So we are very fortunate. It's a very talented panel.
Mm-hmm.
My panelists who will be joining me are Anjali Walker from BCU in Chicago. She's their director of diversity there. Creighton Blackwell from Coastal Credit Union in North Carolina.
Yep.
He's their chief strategy officer there. I know I didn't get that title exactly right, but approximately. And then Teresa Freeborn, of course, who's done many things in her credit union career, but most recently authored a book that has really looked at gender inclusion and gender balance in corporate America with that. And so super talented voices who have really practical experience in, you know, not necessarily in DEI work, but in creating organizations and cultures where more people can be included and who have faced the challenges of that along the way as they've worked in their organizations and tried to help kind of mainstream this idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So what I've asked them to come on and talk with me about during that is, you know, the ups and downs of DEI, especially over the last 3 years. I'd say 6 years even. So I think what we've seen as a credit union movement is, and this happened in beyond just credit unions, but we can look at our micro study of the credit union space with this. So in 2017, hashtag MeToo came out, and there was a ton of awareness about gender in credit unions, and how do we provide more opportunities for women, and how do we create more networks and more support and help advance women's skills in that. There was also a backlash, though, where studies showed that at that time, coming out of 2017 into 2018, men were going on the record of saying, I am less likely to mentor a female executive now because I don't want to find myself in a Me Too moment. And so there was some unintended consequences of this additional focus on those challenges. And not necessarily anything nefarious at all. It wasn't that men were saying, well, I'm sure I can't trust myself in this situation.
Right.
It was more of a, I'm not sure that I know exactly what to do. I'm not sure I really know the rules of this dynamic.
Good point.
Anymore.
Yeah.
And so, so then you fast forward that to 2020, and in 2020, I feel like we had another awakening in the DEI space with racial equity issues when George Floyd was murdered. And so there were many people who said, we have to step up, we have to take action on diversity, equity, and inclusion. This was true in the credit union space as well. And we saw some progress and some strides and some steps forward. But even then, we also have still seen some people say, well, we're not sure what to do. And with more, throughout that whole time, while there was an increased emphasis on different areas of diversity, equity, and inclusion, there was also some backlash from it. So there were executive orders saying, well, you can't talk about, executive orders from the United States president saying, you can't talk about diversity training, or you can't mandate diversity training. And then, of course, not so long ago, the Supreme Court ruling on a case related to affirmative action in universities has also caused people to say, well, wait, what are we supposed to do right now? And attorneys general from, I think, 13 different states came forward and said, hey, we know this only applied to universities, but we think businesses need to keep this in mind, too, in certain types of businesses in their states. So that also causes people to say, oh, well, have we, should we back off? Should we step back? You know, should we not be allowed to consider diversity in hiring, for example? And so the panel, we're going to get the opportunity to really discuss kind of what are these opportunities, where have we seen strides, where have we seen improvements, where are we seeing signs that maybe people want to back off, and what have been effective and successful ways, especially with Anjali and Creighton being in credit unions, that they've been able to help to continue to move things forward in a way that doesn't create, you know, executive concerns or board concerns that there's some kind of a legal issue that may come up for that.
Sometimes there's a lot of uncertainty out there
now,
Jill, right?
I think so.
So just when you think things are getting settled, you know, this is not anywhere near settled, right? So because of people are unsure of what to do. I mean, I don't think there's anything bad about what's going on. They're just like, okay, tell me the rules. Yeah. Tell me what I need to do, right? Is that kind of where we are
Absolutely.
Right now?
I mean, that's the, if you were to, you know, there's a group of people beyond this, and if we were to ask the people sitting in the lobby right now, like, do you think that the world, that equity is a good thing? Do you think it's good to be inclusive?
Sure.
It's very unlikely somebody is going to be like, no, you know what I want is an unfair advantage in a non-inclusive environment. Like,
yeah, no, like
people
say that.
Want that, right. that inclusion.
Right.
But I think it but is
how you
that,
go about doing
like,
it.
How do we get there in a way that advances inclusion?
Mm-hmm.
How do we recognize that this is not a zero-sum game? We're not taking something from somebody to give something to someone else.
Yeah.
And how do you create a level of I don't want to say comfort, because I think it's okay to be a little bit uncomfortable. We're growing, and, mm-hmm. and with that sometimes there are some growing pains.
Yeah, well,
but a level of acceptance
on your toes.
Like these are there are steps that we should take. And also a level of acceptance, because I think another challenge, you know, take away backlash from DEI efforts.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also kind of this like, wait, didn't we do that already? Like, yeah, and just a fatigue that comes with it.
There is a
like,
fatigue.
You know,
definitely.
We don't like. Do we have to do this every year? Like, is it a constant and new area? And
yeah.
so, how to accept this idea of it will constantly be integrated in. There will constantly be actions and opportunities for improvement. You don't get done with being inclusive,
right?
But like making it something that people are accepting of mm-hmm. the way to move forward,
right.
and not afraid of making missteps
right.
in that.
Too. Well, I think this is something else that's going to continually to evolve and get better over time, right?
Yeah.
So at least that's my hope, and I think a lot of other people's hope that this is just going to keep getting iteratively better and better.
Yeah.
So being somebody in your position who's dealing with human beings on a daily basis and putting them in exceptional positions of leadership and stuff. What are you seeing out there in the diversity, equity, inclusion area as far as, you know, are we taking steps from your perspective? What do you see out there right now?
I think we are.
You're on the front lines.
I think we are.
Okay.
I think that we are seeing, so just with talent placement alone, we might not be moving at the rate that we want to or we would like to, but, you know, it's probably GAC 2020, I think. Renee Satterwhite and I came on your show together.
Yes.
And we talked about this interest we had in 30 by 30, which was to see 30% of these key CEO roles
mm-hmm.
held by women and people of color by the year 2030. And this is looking at billion-dollar-plus credit unions, the trade associations, and moving that forward. And at the time, just looking at the statistics on billion-dollar credit unions, about 14% of those billion-dollar credit union CEO roles were held by women. And what we know is that today we've seen some advancement in women holding those roles.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're at about 18% right now.
Okay.
That's an informal Jill Nowacki count. It's not audited numbers there. But I keep a spreadsheet. And so, I think we're at about 18 to 18.5%. And we've seen some that are really high visibility placements. Lee Brady at State Employees.
Mm-hmm.
I am spacing her last name, but Bev at BCU.
Oh, yeah.
Anderson,
gosh, I just had her. Yeah, I just met her at Max. I can't remember her last name. I apologize.
Yeah, so yeah,
we apologize, Bev. We'll get it.
So we're seeing these and Linda Armin at Bethpage, now that I'm thinking about it as well. So some really, you know, moving those steps forward.
Yeah,
and so, you know, 4% growth in 4 years may not be something that we would shout from the rooftops as being amazing progress, but they are steps forward.
It's moving forward.
And what we recognize, too, is it's not like we've had, you know, 50% turnover. We've had a lot of turnover,
yes,
but we have,
50%
turnover in these roles, too. So.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, so obviously there's still work to do.
Yeah.
Obviously. So, yeah. So, oh, my gosh. So, oh, my, I don't know what else to ask you, Jill. Gosh. As usual, you over-deliver. Thank you for that.
Does that mean I talk too much?
No, no. No, this is information that I had no idea was out there, so thank you.
Absolutely.
And your spreadsheet as well.
Right.
So I'll take those numbers too. Yeah, I'll take those numbers for sure. So what are some steps that we need to take to move forward, to keep moving forward? Just more awareness, more education, or what do you advise?
You know, it's going to maybe take it a little bit different direction than that, but certainly awareness, education, we should always be learning and growing.
Sure.
But something that I ended up in a conversation yesterday where I was talking about this concept of people operations and how so often in our organizations, we really look at like, how do we maximize and leverage our lending operations or our technology operations to make sure that the systems that surround the function we're delivering allow us to deliver that function really exceptionally. And when it comes to our people, despite the fact that we say things all the time, like our people are our greatest asset and our people are really what makes the difference, we haven't innovated in that same way to look and say, what is the system that's surrounding our people? Mm-hmm. And is it really working in a way that helps them maximize their productivity on it or like to contribute at their highest level?
Yeah.
And so specifically, one of the areas that I was in this conversation with was the leader of the call center at Oregon Community Credit Union. That credit union sort of famously piloted the idea of this four-day work week
yes.
for their contact center.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sharing some of the information about the improvements to productivity and engagement that came from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at that and say, that is an amazing way to maximize your people operations, right? It's to look at something and say, gosh, this five-day work week, this Monday through Friday, it's not working for our people. Like we're seeing some indicators that there might be a better way.
Yeah.
And then trying something differently. And when you find that, oh, this does increase productivity. This does decrease the number of people who are calling out sick in this. Like, that would be an indicator that you've done something to change your system to allow your people to operate better in that system.
Yep.
And
yep.
so when it comes down to how this ties back to diversity and equity and inclusion is that, you know, just because someone in the Industrial Revolution said 8-hour workdays are the right thing because then we can get 3 shifts going here at the Ford Motor Company, doesn't mean that's still what's right for our people today.
Yeah,
and as we've allowed everything else to evolve in our world, why can't we or why aren't we really being intentional allowing that to evolve too?
Yeah.
And when we do that, I think it does help create that more inclusive environment where different people are really able to thrive in that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I've always thought about that too, kind of in the back of my mind. How antiquated is our work schedules these days? You know, we're still doing the Monday through Friday 9-to-5 type of thing when that was implemented, you know, how many millions of years ago it seems like. So
Well, and like it was implemented for production economy.
For a specific reason.
A lot of what we do is knowledge economy. And so it's like, can you think strategically for 8 hours a day? Like, can you interact with people that way for 8 hours a day and still be at your best at the end of the day? Like, I'm guessing by conversation 72, you're done. I don't know, Mike, how many of these interviews do you do in a day?
Quite a few. And trying to be productive. So, but I was at one conference where a question was asked, like, and there were a bunch of CEOs in the audience, and somebody said, okay, the question was, out of an 8-hour day, how many of those days are you actually productive?
Yeah.
And I think the overwhelming response was like maybe half of those hours, you know, rest of those we're in meetings, phone calls, but you know, how many of those are actually productive, you know? So I totally get what you're saying there. And especially going back to OCCU's example, the 4-day work week, especially if you're in a contact center in a kind of a higher stress type of job where it's repetitive. I mean, that 4-day work week was a blessing big time. So
And there's a
whole change it up in a position like that, right?
Absolutely. And something else we've seen, at least anecdotally, I've heard a lot about, like, consumers are less kind to retail workers now than they were pre-2020.
Yeah.
And so that's another factor that comes into it too, because if it's, you know, it's not even just, you know, if you're dealing with maybe tedious calls or, you know, boring calls or difficult calls because there's a challenge that you're trying to help solve, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you're dealing with the emotional stress of somebody being mean to you or potentially like abusive to you or there's a whole nother element of how are we making sure that the contact center employees are getting the space to step away from that recover before they have to jump onto the next call with somebody else too.
Exactly.
And so I think part of that, just that willingness to look at the environment and really say, like, what are we asking our people to do that might be different from when we set up the structure we did? Mm-hmm. And is there something we can change in this structure mm-hmm. to make it work better for what we're asking of yeah. our people right now?
That's where you hand it off to Barney the bot. You go, hey, right. you have to talk to Barney the bot for a while,
yeah,
right?
Swear it, swear it, our chat bot, not me.
That's the solution right there. Oh, gosh. But that brings me to a whole nother... This is going to be a whole nother show, but how is AI going to come into all of this type of stuff, especially, you know, in that call center environment, all that type of stuff. We'll save that for another show.
But I'm
really anxious to see how that's going to turn out.
So, yeah, I think that is causing some uncertainty and that's a big thing too, that people mm-hmm. are like, if you're the average call center employee and you're worried about AI, mm-hmm. having a manager or a leader who's able to say, hey, here's why we still need the humans, you've still got a job is a helpful side from that people operations side.
Indeed.
But we won't dig into AI.
Whole nother show, Jill. All right, we'll save that for next time. So, all right, thank you so much.
Thank you. As always,
you over-deliver and I love it. So thank you so much, Jill.
Appreciate the
time and keep up the good work there at Humanity.
Thank you.
You are welcome. A quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. This episode brought to you by Origins. Take your indirect lending to the next level.